Ladies and gentlemen, fellow slaves of the plantation, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show. It's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinny Eastwood Show. The only thing worse than the truth is Vinny's jokes. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show, right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, because no New Zealand mainstream media network will give it the platform, because it involves this thing which media are unable to do in this country. Tell the truth! Now, my very special guest, Ashley Farrell, went live on Facebook, what was it, like a couple of weeks ago, I think, talking about our sinister of local families and health and blah, 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 blah. Paula Benefit, a.k.a. Paula Benefit, and she's been, shall we say, in the historical context of New Zealand, not the squeakiest, cleanest fop frock in the cupboard. And I do believe that a lot of information needs to come out about this. So we've got Ashley Farrell with us today, and we're going to go through the article which the mainstream media, for lack of a better word, censored based on your testimony. So Ashley, welcome to the program.
Hey, Vinny.
Now, would you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do first before we get onto this article?
Well, I'm 37. I live in Ōhaupo in New Zealand, obviously, and I'm currently unemployed, but due to no lack of being lazy about it, and I'm a hunter and a fisherman. I spend most of my time, if I can, outside. It's about me, and I'm just sick of the government and the shit that it's doing at the moment. And I have a real story about Paula from when I was a young fella. And it needs to be shared, and people need to see the person that is possibly coming up to leading our country in the next couple of election terms and decades. I follow politics quite closely, and I'm a reformed bullshit artist. So I'm a reformed pretty much con artist. And one day I woke up and I learned how to use the powers of that for good by reading news articles and looking for keywords and crises. And I fought the system for many, many years. I am the product of what happens to kids that are taken off their families for illegitimate reasons by SIFs and never given back to them. I fought the system for my whole life. I've been involved in You Name an Anger Management Program. I've been in it. Not from being angry, from them not listening. I can now read political stories and do my research into the same things and find out complete opposite facts. So I guess that from being a con artist for most of my life and being a liar for most of my life, I learned how to spot it. And so it gave me a unique outlook on politics. And because I speak normal people, I'm not afraid to raise issues that people are afraid to raise. I tried to do this 6 years ago and had it swept under the rugs and had stories pulled off Facebook, but I decided to do it in a way this time that it couldn't be ignored. And it turns out that it hasn't been ignored. Lots of people in New Zealand have actually listened and started listening to what I'm saying. None of the things that I've said in any of my live feeds have been made up. They've been real. And if I post something on Facebook, my whole purpose is to try and show people that it is possible, if you know the right places, to look up and find your rights and see what is really happening. But we live in a world of information, Vinny, and people just don't use it. We've got an internet in front of us, and people spend 90% of their time on Facebook and those types of places complaining about problems, but don't fucking stand up and grow a pair of balls. You know, we can't have that anymore.
They haven't been traumatized enough, and what's happened to you is what happened to me. You get traumatized by authority figures for a long period of time, so that your brain no longer is capable of trusting said authority figures, and because of the inherent pain and injustice that was inflicted upon you, as is customary with complex post-traumatic stress disorder, they often become mediators and journalists and people who expose evils so that those evils do not happen to other people like it happened to them. This is one of the main side effects of trauma. Right.
I was lied to by the system for most of my life, and so like by the time I was four, by the time I was seven, dude, I was a politician, mate. You know, like I had no choice. That was how I had to survive and how I had to live, and I don't think that anyone else should have to do that. You're fucking right. If you get traumatized by a system for long enough and ignored for long enough, you end up biting back, eh?
Yeah. Well, ideally, most people don't, and they wind up, what happens is they continue to avoid the trauma, right? I think there's this peak that we go over. Is the trauma bad enough for you to realize that everything's fucked and you need to change everything about your life? Or is the trauma just bad enough that you think most things are fucked and you want to avoid most of the things in your life? You know, it's just like, have you passed that precipice yet, bro? But on this one, article that you posted on 22nd of July, New Zealand homelessness the worst in OECD by far, is a headline there. And here, homeless as percent of total population in OECD countries, and New Zealand is by far the highest in the OECD, which is just shameful.
Well, that's exactly right. And if you look at it, that those are the only statistics that I could find the actual relevant information on. Like, I tried everything. I even jumped on a VPN and went through Swedish servers and shit like that. And I can't find any actual censuses. And what I found out about that is that, because I've got friends in the United Nations, like, I'm prepared for this. For the last 6 years, I've prepared myself for this. I've got some pretty good friends in some pretty connected places, you know. New Zealand actually told the United Nations to fuck off, like, pretty much. They were like, "Nah, we're not going to do this census by your standards," which are only, there's only two standards in the OECD, and that is, do they have somewhere to live and do they have food to eat every night, pretty much. And New Zealand said no and released a survey of 7 points, and those two particular points were the last 2 points that they did their survey on. So in 2015, that was wrong by at least half. You know, like, so how bad is it now? They say there's 24,000 homeless people in just Auckland alone. I reckon that's fucking bullshit. I reckon maybe in Auckland City and the city district itself, but I don't think in the whole area of Auckland, there's only 24,000 homeless people.
We have more empty homes in Auckland than we have homeless people, if that statistic is to be believed. You know, I mean,
and there's no such thing as a housing crisis. I said it on one of my live feeds. It's bullshit. It's not a housing crisis. It's an affordability crisis that's out there. Mm. If they made it more affordable, people would have homes. They wouldn't have an excuse to sell off land to other people. I also asked for people to do a study on whether refusing not to drop 1080 poison in the places that they want to swap the farmers for land in New Zealand at the moment, and it is the same places that the 1080 poisoning.
Of course.
So figure that one out. And the other lie that I've spotted that someone needs to look into before we get into the Paula Bennett thing is if you look in enough of those of the water debates, how they want to give our water 5.2 billion litres away for $2,000 a year every year for the next 25 years. If you look into that, you'll probably find that the reason they're refusing to budge on it, regardless of how much of a stink we kick up, is because it's been traded or swapped for something else. That's just a conspiracy theory at the moment, but why would they drop the 1080 poison on the same places they're trying to trade the farmers and shit for land? Why would they do that and then go and sell it off as foreign resource, which, by the way, also has an environmental issue attached to it. If you noticed and have a look at it, the Department of Conservation and Game and Birds and Fisheries and MAF and all those people have just given some of those same places that are getting 1080 poisoned and traded to foreign investors for housing through the housing crisis, actually had sanctions removed off it, giving them full rights to treat it as their own land, which means they can mine it. And then on top of that, so these are the things I see from being a con artist, you know, and then on top of that, those same places are also some of the places that were disputed 4 years ago at the beginning of the last election about them wanting to swap, aka places in the Coromandel, places in Fiordland, places in the Abel Tasman National Park, places in the Kahurangi National Park, places in National Park by Taupo, which Te Whare Toa just did a deal with for $8.2 million as well. So, yeah,
now, as a hunter, you've got to be really upset, and I know there's a lot of New Zealand hunters who don't know this, but the original use for 1080 was actually pioneered by the Japanese during the Chinese Manchurian campaign pre-World War II. What they did is they dropped compound 1080 in the rivers upstream from the Manchurian villages that they wanted to exterminate. And downstream, everybody who drank the water from this 1080 poison died, and the Japanese were able to conquer a large portion of Chinese landmass with virtually zero resistance. New Zealand comes along. Well, we've got these TB-infected possums, allegedly, that we've never produced a single shred of evidence in like 20, 30, 40, 50 years that ever existed at all. And so what we want to do is we want to drop this exact same compound into New Zealand rivers and streams and just tell you that we try to avoid them. Oh, you try, do you? You try. You're in a goddamn chopper with $50,000 worth of baits in it, and you're flying over the bush that you can't see the bush floor or where the river systems are. And all the people that happen to have shares in these 1080 compound dropping companies happen to be on the very city councils that approve the drops.
That's ironic. So I've got a group of friends that actually go around. I'm supposed to be in the Abel Tasman today collecting 1080 poison baits, and we collect buckets and buckets of it, and we give it back to them. Oh, you left this in the river. We thought we'd give it back to you.
Just put it in their water tanks, mate. You know, I'm sure they'll appreciate it. Oh, it's safe when it's in the water.
It's 1080 poison. So I also explained it. It's like any class A, real class A drug in its purest form. It's a salt in its most purest form. And the name of the poison, biochlorophyll, is actually sodium fluoroacetate. So it's a salt made out of fluoride and sulfuric acid.
Yep, sounds healthy
so
to
like,
me.
It's like two of the most. That's two things that no one wants to put in their system, ever. And because it's a fluoride, it doesn't actually go away. So it dissipates. It breaks up, like they say, in major rivers. But so one pellet takes 8 hours to break up. But it's fluoride. It never ever leaves, ever. For any reason, it doesn't ever go away. It's like that's why they can't dump fluoride. They make get it mainly from the aluminium smelter in Tiwai, places that do it, and then they send it overseas where it gets processed. So it's just heated up with salt and mixed with acid, literally mixed with acid. You can make it in your backyard in a tin can, man. You can make 1080 poison.
Now, that's one of the problems with New Zealand. You know, if you kill native birds, which every 1080 drop does, kills hundreds and thousands of native birds every single time they do a drop, and they do drops regularly, you can be fined between $5,000 and $100,000 per bird. But not if you're a government department, right? Because they're doing conservation.
Yeah, I was culling about 18 months ago. I was in the, it wasn't that long ago. Beginning of March last year in the Kahurangi National Park, we went up there and we found 28 kiwis and handed them back to the Golden Bay Department of Conservation. And it made the papers, and people took them, and friends that I was with took photos and shit of them, but they didn't do any testing on those 28 kiwis. They did none at all.
Course they did.
We know they died of 1080 poison because I've trapped that area over the last 6 years probably half a dozen times. I actually worked privately as a possum trapper. I did it for myself, and I'd just go up and set traps on the weekends and on my days off work and shit while I was in those areas. So, but yeah, no, they were definitely dead from 1080 poison. You could see this. They had the same symptoms as what any mammal that I've ever found or seen die from the shit. Bleeding eyes and bleeding nostrils, that sort of shit. They weren't crushed, or it wasn't predators. And I've never seen or heard of any stoats ever eating the shit. Rats don't eat it, like, at all. Like, I've gone out and I've done the shit. I've used the shit professionally. I've set bait stations with biochlorophyll, actually set them as a bait station, which I don't necessarily agree with again, so it's sort of me being hypocritical. But those bait stations were set in places where kiwis and ground dwelling birds couldn't get to them. And the way that the little birds like the tomtits and the shining cuckoos and bellbirds and toys eat it is they eat the insects and the flowers that the pollen settles on. So right now they're doing it in the winter, so what's going to happen is all the dust from when they do the drops, which is actually the worst part of it, is going to settle on everything, and when it's going to rain, it's going to make its way down to the canopy floor, and the little insects like crickets and shit like that, they're going to eat it because they're cereal eaters. And then when they eat it, they might not necessarily die from it because they're an insect, but they carry that poison until it leaves their system, and they fuck off, and all the little birds eat them, and they die. And you imagine it at dusk, any flowers that flower in the winter, like the manuka and the kanuka right now, are starting to get like little buds on it. They'll take about 3 or 4 months to turn into flowers, but they'll actually hold and develop around the powder. So when they pop open, the powder's already in the flower. And birds like tuis and nectar eaters, our versions of hummingbirds and shit, come down and they eat it. And then they obviously die of 1080 poison, they fall to the ground. And then the more insect, like scavenging, omnivorous and carcass-eating insects will come along, and birds will come along and eat that carcass, and they'll die from it, and it just carries on. And it actually kills, like, it spreads out, so it starts here, this bait kills here, and it literally kills like this.
Now, 1080 has been tested in the lab for endocrine disruption. So essentially, if you have birth disorders, things like that, that's a sign that you've got endocrine disruptors in your water supply. And it turns out that 1080 can work as an endocrine disruptor within a human body, even if they're drinking water that has 1080 in parts per trillion.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the lethal dose for a human being of sodium fluoroacetate is 2 parts per million. That's the lethal dose, which means if you have 2 parts per million, 2 micrograms per kilo, that's it. You're dead.
This is a fluoride molecule which they put into our drinking water supply on purpose at 1 part per million.
Yeah. Like, so sodium fluoroacetate, because it's a salt, it's a lot stronger than fluoride in its natural form or in its purest form. So it's the part of the fluoride that is the poison, and it's actually found naturally. It's synthesized from a naturally found occurring plant, and that's one of the arguments they use. But fluoride itself is two parts per thousand per kilo. So 2 grams out of every kilogram for a lethal dose, to be considered a lethal or a toxic dose for a human being is 2 parts per thousand, which is even less. It's a heavier weight, but they just put it like that. You know, it's bad shit, bro. Yeah, with fluoride, the thing with fluoride is they used to use it. The Germans used to use it to put in water to make people more susceptible to suggestion. Like, Hitler was known to use it on the Jews, and he used it to dumb them down. It's proven. It makes you thick.
I'm just trying to search up something here because it turns out that Joseph Goebbels, the Minister of Public Enlightenment and Propaganda, and I love how those two goes together there.
That's cool.
Here's a quote from him. If you tell a lie big enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually come to believe it. The lie can be maintained only for such time as the state can shield the people from the political, economic, and or military consequences of the lie. It thus becomes vitally important for the state to use all of its powers to repress dissent, for the truth is the mortal enemy of the lie, and thus, by extension, the truth is the greatest enemy of the state.
Yep.
Now, let's get onto this article here. Stuff, politics. One lied, one says she never did. The untold backstories of political leaders Paula Bennett and Matiria Touré by Tony Wall on July 23rd. Greens co-leader Matiria Touré has confessed she lied to keep her benefit. Paula Bennett and Matiria Touré could have been soul sisters. They are the same age, both part Māori, and have remarkably similar life stories. Now, at any point you want to add in here something, Ash, just jump into it and interrupt me. Okay. They gave birth to her sole daughters when young and single, Bennett at 17, Touré at 23, collected the domestic purposes benefit, did tertiary study with government help, and against all the odds became members of parliament. Their experiences as young women were similar.
Well, actually, but... can I stop you there?
Yep.
See what you just said, against all odds they became members of parliament. I have to say to both of these women, and that this is, you know, it's doesn't sound like my stand on either of them usually, but hats off to them, you know, like they fucking did. They came from a shit, they turned their lives from shit to becoming members of parliament. But my problem with it is, and the only reason I come out with about this is because Paula personally has been the minister on everything that helped her get ahead and actually taken all of those things away, man. Like, fuck you, Paula. That's a dick. That's just a straight dick move. And whether I knew her or not, I would still be speaking out openly against her. But I did know her, and she hasn't fucking changed at all. She took the benefits that got her in the position that she's in and took them away from everybody else, every other single mum out there. So by doing that, she fucked a million kids in this country just by that move, man.
It's benefiting from walking through the door by closing it behind you, so nobody else can walk through it, you know. But those experiences influence them in different ways.
Absolutely bullshit. Because, yeah, you know, like, fuck, that's a straight up dick move, man. Mm. But that's a dick move. That's the only way to put it, and that's why I came out so blatantly and publicly. Like I said, I tried to do this 6 years ago, and this time I just did it. Fuck this. I'm going to post the original letter that I sent up on Facebook.
Yeah.
So I posted the original letter, and it just so happens that it got shared 5,500 times before it got taken down, and it's still getting shared now. Nah, you don't do dick like moves like that to people in the country that I actually love. You know, this is our country, man. Like, can't have that happen.
Well, I'd say it was our country. It's not anymore. It belongs to somebody else, and we need to merely take it back.
It's Lisbony, and we have to literally take it back, and we have to do it using peaceful resolution and not the uprisings and shit that people want to start, little uprisings.
That's
around
what
the country.
They want, you know, because if people violently uprise, the government has a monopoly on force. They've got the military, they've got the police, they can easily repress any violent opposition. And that's why they send agents into, you know, alternative media and activist groups and things like that to try and hype people up, yeah, to try and get them really angry so that they'll do something stupid that the government can then demonize everybody who has a conscience with and repress people even further. Continuing on with the article, what they learned from the experience of being solo mums on benefits taught one of the importance of a welfare safety net for those who need it most, and taught the other the importance of self-sufficiency by being corrupt and taking money to do corrupt things. That's so subtly self-sufficient. The two were shaped by those challenges into very different political leaders and are now fighting for New Zealand's vote in September's election. But Touré and Bennett's life experiences are at the very heart of their world views. As if... Bennett, 48, pardon, became Minister of Social Welfare in a Conservative national government, eventually climbing to the giddy heights of Deputy Prime Minister, while Touré, 47, had early dalliances? What's a dalliance? I never even heard that word before, bro. With the McGillicuddy's... had early alliances with the McGillicuddy Serious Party and the Legalised Cannabis Party before gaining respectability as co-leader of the Greens. Any comments, Ashley?
I sort of got to take my hat off to Terry for coming out and saying, yeah, okay, well, actually, I did that, and it was a brave move, but I do think it was silly of her as a politician, because now that's something that the Nationals can pick on her for. But she came out, and she's never not been, you know, like, she is getting corrupted by the money in politics. Everyone can see that. It's a natural form. If you become a politician, eventually greed seems to get them, you know, regardless of who they are. But she's still stuck to where she came from. But Paul has blatantly lied about it. And since this article's come out, as we get further down, you'll see that when my letter was first posted, this time first posted and went public, she actually first denied knowing me, then denied it ever being the way that it's about to come out publicly about. You know, like, Terry is okay. I think that she's done all right. She's not she's definitely the lesser of two evils out of them. And I'm not voting for any of those parties. I'm not voting for National or Greens or Labour at all.
Yeah.
In any form.
I wouldn't recommend anybody do either. Touré became a hero to beneficiaries this week after promising to increase core benefits by 20% and dismantle Bennett's controversial obligations around job seeking. Now, I've got a comment of my own to make about this, actually. It's because after the Muldoon era, we had Sir Roger Douglas. Just remember, when you get knighted in New Zealand, it means that you're a complete criminal, corrupt scumbag who fucked the country in some way, okay? So Sir Roger Douglas did precisely that. They go, okay, how much are people drawing on the benefits? Well, they're drawing almost the exact same amount as they would when they're working. But doesn't that mean that they can still participate in society and feel real guilty about collecting such a massive benefit that it'll motivate them hugely to go out and find another job as quickly as possible? Yeah. Well, doesn't New Zealand guarantee people a job anyway? Yeah. Well, let's get rid of all of that then. Why have social safety nets when you can just allow people to get bludgeonly into poverty, which will increase the amount of illnesses that they suffer and the amount of crimes that they commit, so that we can use that as justification to scare the living fuck out of the middle class to say it's these homeless people and these jobless people that are a problem, not us who robbed them of all their benefits, which their tax money fucking paid for.
Hey man, I could get 4,000 men and women off the benefit tomorrow if I was given the right incentive and help to do it, trapping possums instead of dropping 1080 poison.
Yeah.
You know,
right there.
How many people, hey man, do you want a job where you get to go for a bushwalk three times a week and you get paid minimum wage regardless of how shitty it is, but you get to keep all the fur off the possums that you kill? We just want you to bring the tails back so we can count them. You know what I mean? Like,
here you go. Beautiful, wouldn't it, mate?
It's minimum wage for 40 hours a week. All you got to do is you got to go out and 40 hours a week go and trap possums. So you go for bushwalks with your dog and your kids, you know, like, and set 100 possum traps. 100 possum traps weighs about 15 kilos, you know, like, but go, man, go for walks. Take you 2 hours to go and set your fucking possum traps, but you get 40 hours minimum wage and you get to keep 100 possums worth of skins every week. You know, and it's about 13 to 15 possums make a kilo of fur, and a kilo of fur is $100 with no tax on top. Sold to fur markets, which turn it into clothes, so the government makes a service tax off it as well. You mean, that's 4,000 people. I know that for a fact, because me and friends have done our research into that. There's 4,000 people that would sign up for their job.
Now, I'll continue on with the article. When making the announcement, Matilia Tude also admitted to fraud, saying she'd lied about her living arrangements to keep her benefit. People came out in support using the I Am Matilia hashtag, but others were furious. Former Wins boss Christine Rankin calling Tude absolutely disgraceful. Christine Rankin, why do I know that name?
Oh, geez, only because she was like the Minister of Police. She's that lady that was in before Paula Bennett that got in a bit of trouble for being a dick. Well, she was the Minister of Police as well.
Well, you don't fucking say. Now.
it isn't cool that Terrier did that and got away with that and is in the position she's in. Well, I actually understand it. How are you supposed to afford to even look for a job if you can't drive to your job interview?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, and you've got to pay your rent. You've got to keep your food. Otherwise, you become one of the statistics. I mean, like, you have to. So these people that have no choice but to lie about it. I'm not talking about people that spend all their fucking money on drugs and alcohol like I did when I was younger. I'm talking about people that actually really do just need that extra $25 a week to put in their car so they can get to work for their first little while or get to job interviews, you know. And now if you're on a benefit because of Paula, now you actually, you have to lie to them. You got no fucking choice, man.
Yeah.
And now they can do your for it, right?
Let me put this into perspective for you, my fellow Kiwis here. Tax dodging by major corporations in New Zealand, $30 to $40 billion a year.
Yeah.
Welfare benefit fraud, $3 to $4 billion a year. So you're literally going, fuck 90% of the problem, let's focus on 10% of the problem.
Yeah, look, that's that thing I was talking about in my first live feed about eat your shit. Here you go. Eat your shit, New Zealand. You're only going to know about what we tell you about. The corruption in this government is disgusting, and it's so blatant that people don't even recognise it for what it is. They go, oh, I'm not very happy about that. I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to send a few comments. I'm going to put a comment on the bottom of a post that I saw on Facebook, but I'm not actually going to get off my ass and speak out about it.
Yeah.
Fuck off. Stop being pussies.
Well, I saw a great Kiwi researcher actually doing a presentation about chemtrailing in New Zealand, and he noted this one particular phenomenon in human behaviour. The less somebody knows about a subject, the more they think they know about it.
Yeah, the land of the world of disinformation, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they only let you know, it's like the human rights. The only reason that the government's getting away with what they're getting, because when you research on any New Zealand Common website about your human rights and the sovereign rights of New Zealand and the laws and Māori rights and European rights and shipping rights and everything else, there's about 40,000 pages you got to fucking read to get through to it. So what the government does, they just give you the top three they want you to know, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, what's that name of it? Bring your community helpline. Bring your local community helpline. What are they going to tell you? They're all going to tell you three things. You know, and it doesn't matter what you ring up about, they'll all tell you the three main things you're allowed to know. You go into a WINS office these days and they'll tell you, oh, you're allowed to do this, you're allowed to do that. But if you were to ask, like literally ask for a copy of your rights and your legal obligations and the things the government have to do to you once you sign up on that benefit, you'd be fucking blown away. You know, that's just get educated, man. You don't have to know about everything. You don't have to speak a language to understand it, eh?
Well, as Penny Bright said, if you don't know your rights, you don't have any. And if you don't defend the rights you do have, you frickin' lose them. And she was the person who actually came up with this nickname, Pull Your Benefit. So I'll continuing on with the article. Bennett, meanwhile, is still known in certain circles as Pull Your Benefit. Thank you, Penny Bright, who's a great activist. I'd probably say she's the activist of New Zealand that has inspired me for many years. After she ushered in strict new rules and sanctions for beneficiaries during her time as minister from 2008 to 2014, and is seen by many to have betrayed her roots.
Yep.
She told media Touré's admissions were disappointing because she would have lied about it, in fact did, because hard-working taxpayers expected honesty from people claiming a benefit. And meanwhile, as she doesn't point out the irony that people do not expect honesty from politicians like her, she herself had not, quote, air quotes here, deliberately lied to receive money during her own time on the DPP, she said. Now, I love how the New Zealand media quote, that's what she said, and don't actually look into any of the evidence backing up whether or not, oh, so that's what you said, but what did you actually frickin' do? They don't do that.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, fellas, right, I can tell the whole world right now, like, I knew Paula from the ages of 8 to nearly 14 or to 14 years old. It was when I was 14 that I ran away from home, and I still knew her, and I knew her well. Like, we, as kids, we went and stayed at her house while she was on the benefit and studying, and at that, literally within the space of every Christmas holidays, we'd stay at three of her and Alan Phillips's, which is her fucking husband's houses, literally three of them, one in Taupo, one in Tutera, and one on Wellesley Road. And further down the article, you'll see that she was in Tutera, and was in Wellesley Road and Napier. And they say nothing about her house in Taupo that she was getting brought at that time from Housing New Zealand. So, yeah, she did fucking lie, and she did deliberately lie during it.
Wild times. Bennett has spoken before about how she worked hard at multiple jobs to support her daughter, most of them blowjob, and eventually moving to Auckland and working in a rest home before being accepted as a mature student at Massey University. Maturity by a loose definition. Now, she's only hinted at what she was up to in her late teens and early 20s, once telling The Independent, "I took an unfortunate turn in my teenage years and found myself mixing with the wrong people, namely National Party members." And then... oh, go ahead, yep.
Yeah, well, she did. I've never been one to hide it. Like, I was brought up in the Napier Tattoo Club, and Paula was there from... She would have been about 18 years old. I was 8 when I met her. I was 10 when she slapped me, but that's another story. I was 8 when I met her, and she's 10 years older than me. So, no, she was mixing with the wrong people. The people that were that were associated with my adoptive mother and her partner, they weren't all very nice people at all. And, she's only hinted at some of the shit I've seen on very, 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 actually every fucking time she was at the old lady's place in Nuffield Ave. That was them. They was fucking smoking heaps of weed, getting fucking off their faces on lines. I know what it is now. You know, I know what drugs are now. I went down that road until only a few years ago. I went down the harder Class A drug road, and I know what I saw on those tables, you know. I'm not dumb. I remember everything from when I was a kid. Like that's what made me good at being a good liar, man. It's because I remembered everything.
Well, and you had
the people that she was hanging out with, they weren't nice people. And I can say that. And I can say that on national TV. Like, I've confronted all of them, and I've told them, all of these people that were around me and my sister when we were kids, and then Paula is one of them. You know, they weren't nice. They were all fucking gang members and truck drivers and all sorts of fucking just real rugged, hard motherfuckers, really.
Well, you know, if you want to learn how to be a parliamentarian and do it right, there's your special club.
Hey, mate, her husband, Alan, her current husband that she got remarried, that they rekindled with when they were 12, I used to watch them sit down drunk off their faces, speeding off their fucking heads, getting tattooed on my kitchen table when I was a kid, and Paula was one of those people, mate. So, if she, you know, like when this first came out, she fucking denied it. She denied even knowing me. She can't deny it anymore. And now, like this is straight up. Like, I used to watch them get her husband or her now current husband and all of her friends sit down and get fucked up at my kitchen table at my house when I was a kid, right in front of me and my sisters, you know, like right there. So yeah, she can't fucking say that there. Yeah, nah, fuck her. She's a dick. She's been
The Minister of Social Development getting a tattoo while she's drunk and speeding off her head in front of 10-year-olds. You're in the National Party. Go ahead.
Like I said, I've got everything that I'm saying, and the person that let this part of the article out knows this because he went to Napier and he met these people that used to hang out with her. You know, like, yeah. Carry
now,
on, bro.
Bennett says, "I made mistakes and rebelled a bit." Oh, just a bit. You know, I love one of the things about the psychopathic mindset, ladies and gentlemen, is that not only do they never actually take responsibility for anything that they do, they never actually see that there's anything wrong with what it does. And if they do in any way admit even marginally what it is that they've been doing, they play it down so much as to make people feel sorry for them instead of their victims.
When you do that sort of
thing, you meet people on the edge and doing some unsavoury sort of stuff. You don't say, Bennett, who is Minister of Police.
I just figured it out, Vinny. Maybe she knows that if you lead a bad life when you're young and don't change as you get older, you become a politician.
Well, you know...
down this road, kids.
How we're raised and the way we think things work determines a very large proportion of what we turn into as adults. Now, when I lied or when I attacked people as a child, very violent, very aggressive, I got hit back. I got badly teased. I lost jobs. I lost this, that, and the other. I suffered as a direct result of any form of scumbaggery that I was committing on other people. And as a direct result, my brain went to me, are you a fucking idiot? Stop doing what you're doing, because it's not working. Now, if you don't have those experiences that I do, if somebody doesn't pull you up on it, on the other hand, your brain will actually enhance those scumbaggery skills and learn to draw more and more benefits from them day by day, day by day, through sheer scumbaggery, as Paula Bennett would know. Now, Bennett has spoken before about how she worked hard at multiple jobs to support her daughter. I've read that part. Made respect. Bennett, who is Minister of Police, Tourism and Climate Change Issues. Oh my God, that's three issues right there, and I'm just like, oh, this person's in charge of that. Oh my God.
Oh, yeah, mate, we could digress for hours on that shit, hey? Yeah.
Declined to be interviewed about what she had told social welfare officials when she was on the benefit. Oh, so she denied ever saying anything declined to be interviewed about it to confirm.
What she said about my claims was that she refused to let them be investigated by the police because she was categorical dismissal. What the fuck does that mean? That next time we're driving along in our cars and get pulled up for doing nothing wrong again, and you show them your ID, and if you know your rights, that's all you do. And they turn around and go, oh, you were speeding. You can turn around and go, oh, sorry, mate, I didn't notice. I was categorical dismissal on that one. Does that mean that we're allowed to do that?
If you're Minister of Police, yep.
Damn it. You can't arrest me. I'm your boss. Yeah.
Some people we approached said they'd been asked not to talk to the media. Do you know what a cover-up is, ladies and gentlemen? It's when a large portion of very damning information has been made public, and in order to stop the certain political heat from those facts getting out and into the public consciousness, you need to silence and destroy all and everything that has ever been said about it with a blanket of repeated lies, mischaracterizations, and most importantly, repeated threats to anybody who speaks out against you. Now, I don't know if anybody knows this, but Paula Bennett has a long, sad history of being in positions of power and using that power against people, right? I recall there was an article about that lady who asked her about her benefit or something like that, and then Paula Bennett personally just went ordered that WINS officer to terminate that lady's benefit or something like that a little while back. You know, just unbridled. Right? That's what we're dealing with here.
Yeah.
But others who knew Bennett when she was a waitress at the Stag Park truck stop near Taupo and attending social events connected to the Napier Tattoo Club were happy to speak. And this is what you were saying before earlier.
So I met Paula when I was 8. Now, when I was a kid, I'm sorry about my language, Vinny, but I speak to everybody in the same tone, you know, like because that's just who I am. And I respect you about speaking to people all in the same tone and taking the piss. But now, I met her when I was 8 because I was a cunt of a kid. I was that kid that didn't even ask why not, you know. I had to do it, so I was always grounded. And during school holidays and on my weekends, because my mother's husband was a truck driver, I'd go on all these different strange people's trucks. And I used to go on her husband's truck when he was driving for a company called Chapel's Transport. And he ended up working for Skrodowski Transport. I went in another truck. But I met him at Stag Park for the first time when Paula served me. I used to get a bowl of chips and 2 eggs on toast every time I went in the truck to go, you know, because that was the thing done back then. So that's where I met her when I was 8 years old, was at Stag Park. I mentioned that in my first letter before any of this was made public. Mm. And all of the information that's in this, I wasn't released any of it because that's what I asked. Anyone who does their investigations on it, you can have your initial interview with me, and after that, go and do your own research and release it to the public without telling me a fucking thing. No one's told me a damn thing. You know, so everything in here is exactly what I said in my letter.
Truck driver Mike Charlton, known as Charlie, was a regular at Stag Park and socialised with Bennett's circle. He remembers her as a, quote, party girl, doing everything hard, living life to the fullest. She was the life and soul of parties, really. She wasn't shy. Parties would sometimes last all night, Charlton says. There has always been heaps of dope there. I saw Paula smoking.
Fuck, she used to smoke everything, mate. She... smoking, doing lines. Hey, one thing I will say though is I never saw any of them putting needles in their arms or anything, but it was fucking heaps of drugs, dude. I used to steal weed out of Paula Bennett's bag when I was a kid and sell it to the older kids at the Napier Tattoo Club.
Bennett's buds, though.
Yeah. Like, because I was quite small and little, big ears. Like, I was a cute little black kid. That's how it was. So I used to go up and just hide behind them and grab a couple of buds and go and sell it for lollies and shit to the other kids at tattoo conventions at my house, all sorts of shit. Go and steal her joints and cigarettes out of the ashtray and shit. This is real. I'm not lying about any of this. Like people have come out. Like you'll see. You carry on.
Well, it's nothing that none of us who went to Dunedin University haven't tried at least 10 times. Now, Charlton says, it pissed me off when she got into Parliament and then she started putting it into the beneficiaries. I thought, that's a complete turnaround from what she was. She was a perfect fit. Another truckie, Rex Howie, says he knew Bennett and her then-boyfriend, truck driver Alan Phelps, or Philpsy.
In my letter, bro? What did my first letter say? I even said, a.k.a. Phelpsy. Alan Phelps, a.k.a. Phelpsy, in my first letter.
Who'd helped to set up the tattoo club. Bennett reconnected with Phelps later in life, and they married in 2012. The pair were living together at a place in Lake Tutera, 40 kilometres north of Napier, Howie says, and Bennett also rented a place in Wellesley Road, Napier. Now, were these nice places, bro? Like, you said her man had multiple homes.
Yeah, they were. They were quite nice places. Like, they weren't, like, shitty little places. Even the house out in Tutera. Like, I can't remember the exact addresses, but I can literally drive right past them and point them out and say, look, that's the house there. But, they were nice. They were all nice houses.
The club had more than 100 members, many of them truckers and bikers, and things would sometimes get a bit wild. Quote,
well,
she remembers...
That's a bit of an understatement, dude. I saw more titty by the time I was 12 than the average fucking dead man has ever seen in his life, dude. like, straight up, you know, like, imagine waking up. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, your parents haven't gone to bed. You wake up to the sound of a tattoo machine happening in the kitchen. You go out to get your cornflakes, and there's some naked chick with a tit out getting tattooed on her boob. Oh, you know? That's what it was like as a kid, man. For me.
Quote, she remembers the respectable part of it. Buckies,
man. Like, what do you expect?
Quote, she remembers the respectable part of it. Then she glosses over the rest by saying she fell in with the wrong crowd. I say she was a perfect fit for the crowd, and they weren't a bad crowd at all. I never thought...
Yeah, they weren't a bad crowd, but they weren't, you know, like, it's not the... Yeah, it's not the place for a politician.
I mean, I do want to actually do that then, host a honorary National Party meeting... At a tattoo club or something like that, and just say, come on, we know all you National Party, you've got potential, come on in, bro, we'll show you a good time, how to be the next Prime Minister.
show you how to get fucked up, make dumb decisions, but yeah. Hey, one thing I will say about them all, because of the people that they were, none of them were idiots, you know, they had jobs and shit like that, but they weren't. Now that not a bad crowd thing is here. Now they weren't a good crowd, bro. You know, like the only thing that differentiated, in my eyes anyway, that differentiated made them different from any gang is that they didn't wear an actual patch. There's some pretty humble dudes, dude.
Yeah. I never thought she'd become deputy PM. Another truck driver, Billy Sherman, who was the tattoo club's patron and worked with Phelps, remembers Bennett as very loud, very jovial. She always managed to get herself noticed when she was in the room. It was a hard case crew. I never thought she'd become deputy prime minister, for fuck's sake.
Billy Sherman, man, like his oldest son Jason and his kids and his wife Karina, they're really nice people. But it was their kids that I used to steal weed for to sell, because they were like the older kids. They were sort of 5 or 6 years older than me, so I used to steal weed on Porter and sell it to them. But Bill was a good man. He's a hard dude, though, real hard dude. But he's a good man.
I don't have a lot of time for the woman. For her to be doing what she's doing now and what she's done. Lisa Farrell knew Bennett as a Bennett. Just call it. Ladies and gentlemen, you can't make this shit up. The woman who's in charge of the benefits is called Bennett. All right, right. It's just you can't make this stuff up. As a school kid, because her parents used to be friends with her and the Phelps. Farrell says she would feed Bennett's cats when she was away and babysit Anna.
Yep. That's Lisa's obviously a relation of mine. She's my big sister, one of my sisters anyway. Yeah, so I hadn't talked to her properly for 7 years. Like, we've never really gotten along as adults because that's just what we are. But yeah, she came out and happily spoke to people as well. So we'd go out at school holidays when they went away, or if Paula went in the truck, we'd get paid like $2 a day to go around and feed the cats. Yeah, when they're at Wellesley Road. And that was at the same time as like I said at the beginning and continue to say, is that we also go and stay at her place in Tutera, and we go and stay at her place out in Taupo as well.
Mm-hmm. She remembers visiting Bennett and Phelps at their Lake Tutera place. All the truck drivers would hit the piss and us kids would go exploring up the hill.
I know for a fact that my big sister said a whole lot fucking more than that. And I do know that, and she'll come out once it's been finished going through media. You'd probably be able to speak to her off the record as well, Vinny. Yeah.
Other times, parties would be held at Farrell's place. It was keg parties with truck drivers and bikies and stuff. Us kids would be pulling the jugs. They were always passing the funny smelling cigarettes between each other.
Well, that's what they used to tell us to go and get. Oh, can you pass it? Go and get the funny cigarette off Uncle, or go and get the funny cigarette off and pass it over to us. You know, like, yeah, I could roll a joint by the time I was 10, man. For real. Like, serious.
Yeah.
You know, like, I knew what all of that stuff was before the time I was 10. Like I said, at 10 years old, when I got slapped in the face by Paula, it's because she thought I was stealing her piss, but I wasn't. I was breaking into her. I was stealing her handbag so I could get her weed out and sell some of it to the bigger kids.
Well, yeah. You know, unfair punishments, what can I say? Farrell says many of the women in the group were on the DPB while in relationships, which is against the rules. Stuff asked Bennett if she had claimed the DPB while in a relationship or while living with Phelps. She said through a spokeswoman, okay, here's another thing, ladies and gentlemen, about public relations, PR. If you're going to lie, and you know for a that you're going to lie, what you do is you lie to somebody who can then act as an intermediary who doesn't know that you're lying. So that way, when they pass on your lies, they're not technically lying, they just believed what you say. And you create an invisible barrier of scumbaggery to protect you from the consequences of your actions. Now, that's the end of the first hour, ladies and gentlemen. I do want you to remember that this is indeed a listener-supported broadcast. I do want you to go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. If you are a Kiwi, sign up through that Kiwi Bank, a couple of dollars a week or per month, whatever you can. Every single dollar simply goes to me surviving and continuing to produce content that the mainstream media in this country will not produce, and to help get the stories of the real people in this country who are actually fighting for a better tomorrow, to expose the scumbaggery past of this nation, to give them the coverage that they deserve that none of the media will actually give them. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and American Freedom Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, fellow slaves of the plantation, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show. And Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinny Eastwood Show. The only thing worse than the truth is Vinny's jokes. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com every single week for the listening discomfort of the intelligence agencies that monitor all social media for the benefit of state intelligence services and the ministers that control them. Now, my very special guest.
To say hello to the people monitoring my my Facebook and my live feeds and all of that while you're here. Just saying hello to them, Vinny.
Yeah, well, I'd like to also remind them. I know you're doing your job, and I know you're watching this as part, and you're getting paid and that kind of thing. That's all well and good. Just remember that this country is descending into tyranny, and that in every single time any tyranny is successful in its takeover and suppression of the local individual people, the people in your position, the surveillance, the propagandists, the people who were the strong arm that broke the lines and things of that nature, they are the first people that said government will exterminate after taking power. Why? Because you are the ones who know by which methods that government came to power, and you are hence the only people that can threaten their power once it is established. So if you think you're doing your job now, if you think you're being appreciated, you think you're doing something good for the country, you're not. And if you think you're going to survive after the country descends into tyranny that you helped, you're not. All right? Just want to make sure that all of you know precisely what it is you're in for, so that you've got informed consent. I care about you as much as I do any of the people who are your victims.
Yeah.
Now, I'm a proud... we're talking about this this Paula Bennett article, so we're simply going to rush and continue on with it and try and get through it within this second hour as much as we can. I'm proud of the woman I am. It's been a journey to get here. I have always been upfront about the fact that I haven't led a blameless, sin-free part. Oh, upfront!
What is the definition of upfront? When you get a spokesperson to lie for you, when you deny being allowed to even be interviewed about the lies that you've told. I'm totally upfront.
Yeah. She's so upfront, I've called her out several times. Like I've said, why don't we have a face-to-face on public TV? Several times, and no, I haven't ever heard back. And I'd just like to say to the general public and people that actually listen, I have received no cease and desist order or anti-harassment order or any type of order from any lawyers or anybody to actually do with Paula personally at all, ever, for any reason.
And that's because what you're telling is the truth, and that there's no legal recourse when someone's telling the truth about you. I found that's quite funny. You can do it if somebody lies about you, but not when they're telling the truth.
And if they take me to court because it's election time, they'll do it publicly. And if they don't take me to court publicly, then I have the right to stand and say I want this trial made completely public, which means media coverage all the time. I also will have the right to counterclaim. And my counterclaims aren't going to be what people think they are. I'm going to ask, well, my counterclaim is all to do. I'm standing in a fucking court. It's my legal right to say, okay, I'm counterclaiming for corruption in your government. And people have to take notice and listen to it. So because it will be said in a high court, if they take me to court for any of the things they're trying to, then I will just counterclaim straight away.
What's problematic instantly. About that one, Ash, is that the New Zealand courts aren't required to record. Okay, they can edit their transcripts, and they can also tell the media to turn the cameras off and hold them in contempt of court if they report things that the court specifically tells them not to. I found that out the hard way when a couple of the videos on my YouTube channel got deleted by the Ministry of Justice. Indeed, deleting videos off my YouTube channel because they were filmed in a courtroom without permission. So there's a couple of things to worry about there on that side. And the other possibility is, can you really trust the media to tell the truth about these things anyway, even if they tried?
Well, they can't not tell the truth about it anymore, because what can they lie about? I've come out about everything absolutely publicly. Mm. They can't lie about it. Everybody already knows.
Mm.
So they can't discredit me, because I've already given, you know, like, you can't discredit me. I admit to what I was. They can't say that anything that I've said is a lie. They can't look into anything that I'm doing illegally at the moment, because I'm not, you know, like, they can't. They can't do anything to me legally in a courtroom, bro.
Mm.
So if they take me to court, the only thing they'll have to stand on is trying to counterclaim against my counterclaim, which means them having to prove themselves innocent before they can try and charge me with being guilty.
Hmm. Might work.
Do you get? I can't explain it in political jargon, but I know that what I'm saying is true and correct. And also, because I got everything that I've put on Facebook has been signed by a JP, including my videos and live feeds, because of the steps that I took. Once my letter came out, I had the right people contact me and tell me what I needed to do, and because I've done that, it's up to me whether I have any of that transcript released to the public. It's not up to the courts or the media. They're not actually allowed to tell me what I can and can't do with my personal property. I can release it to the public in any media form that I want, and it's up to them to try and stop that from being released once it's released. You know what I mean? Like, doing what they do to your videos and taking it off. I've done my research into it, bro. I actually want them to stand me in a courtroom. If they stand me in a courtroom, then I can actually do something about the situation that we're in. I've spent 6 years preparing to do this, so I haven't just done it out of anger. You know, like, it's something that I've
Right. Yeah, well, that makes one of us. Now,
yeah. It took a long time to find that loophole, though, man. Like, it did. It took a lot of work and a lot of hours in libraries and a lot of hours on internets, and just hours and hours, hundreds, thousands of hours of researching into how to find that loophole to get stood in court to be able to come out and do this.
On with the article then. Struggle Street. Meanwhile, Ture had dropped out of high school with no qualifications and was looking for work in Wellington. She and her younger sister had grown up in Palmerston North, their Māori labourer father and Pākehā mother struggling to make ends meet. At one point, they'd had to live in a car for a couple of weeks because they couldn't find accommodation. Ture's father... Oh, by the way, that's another huge major thing that's going on in Auckland right now. People sleeping and living in their cars, right? And then John Key stands down at a time where this phenomenon is just starting to hit the press, basically, and he goes, yeah, well, I've really helped out the poor of New Zealand, we've helped the economy and so on and so forth, when the exact every single measure of economic growth is in the red or completely having cooked books. It's just unbelievable how hard things are getting for people in this country, bro.
Yeah, it's disgusting. My partner Alice, she put out there that at our place, and I reshared her post and put a little bit on there as well, is that if there's any real homeless actual families, and I'm not talking about single people, I'm sorry to be rude, all the people sleeping singly in their cars that do get to hear this, but I'm talking about people with kids that just need a warm bed and shit for a couple of days to come in and fuck, bro, I've got 4 acres of land and I've got a horse and I've got a family-friendly dog and there's scooters and there's a warm shower and there's 2 spare beds and, you know, to anyone that actually needs it, that's a family that need to give their kids a couple of days warm sleep in a bed where they don't have to worry about that sort of shit. So we put that out there. Over the school holidays, we didn't have anyone actually accept the offer because they feel stink, but they shouldn't feel stink because both me and my partner have both lived in that situation. Like, I've been homeless more than once in my life, a couple of times out of choice just because I liked the freedom, but then a couple of times because it wasn't out of choice. So, yeah, we've been there, and that offer still stands.
You know, what really fucks me off about this country, Ash, is that they pull your benefits and they pull a lot of the benefits of actually being a citizen of this country, and then when you need those benefits, you feel stink about asking for those things that were once yours that were now taken away.
Yeah.
It's your fault, you know?
Yeah, well, that sometimes a little bit of kindness from a stranger is all people need to get some type of faith back in humanity, but they don't want us to have faith in humanity anymore. They want us to have faith in, here's your shit, play with your fidget spinner, have a chatterring, you know, play this video game. You know, that's what they want you to have faith in, the faith in being able to be mindless.
Yeah, well, it's when you're seeing people suffering around you, you have to take personal responsibility for being a good cunt and helping them out in their time of need. There's this one time I was walking up Queen Street, and the son of the guy who owns Dickie's Work Clothes New Zealand, right, bumped into him, and he'd had this box, right, full of free Dickie's clothing that he was just handing out to people on the street. Here you go, bro, here you go, here's some clothing. That good cunt, right? And then some boys come up to him, smack him over, steal all the fucking clothing and the guy's wallet and the guy's weed. So not only does he not have no weed anymore, he doesn't even have enough money to get a bloody bus home, right? And I could see it in his face. This, I have fucking lost my faith in humanity right now. And I said to him, bro, this is my last $10. This is my only joint. Take it. It's yours. Restored his faith in humanity instantly. You know? Yeah. And that's the thing, you got to take personal responsibility. You're right there, okay? I know it's very, very hard to feel other people's pain, ladies and gentlemen, but you got to do it. It's the whole reason why I do these long format shows, because you can't feel how somebody feels by talking to them for 30 fucking seconds about something bad that happened to them, okay? You can't. Yeah. You don't have the developed empathy. Sorry, what one?
They put that. They use that same ploy on media shows. They'll give you a 10-minute interview, which is why I really haven't wanted to do anything. That's why I said yes to you, because you don't edit shit. They'll interview you for 10 minutes and show 30 seconds of what you actually said and misconstrue your story, so you never get to hear how the person that's speaking actually really feels about a subject. You don't get to hear their full opinion on it. You know, I think that's unfair.
Yeah, they don't get to lay out the facts. And that is the idea of the media, unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, is to ensure that your voice of sanity is not reflected back to you. Because if it was, you'd realize a lot of the people that are running society and in the most powerful and influential and respectable positions are not worthy of them. 2 days farther, Richard had found work through PEP schemes, but in the late 1980s, that suddenly changed and he had to work for the basic dole. He was told to work for a school and asked if he could be assigned to one with a major high Māori role. Instead, he was sent to a school in a wealthy Pākehā area, Ture recalls, where he was made the janitor's assistant. It stripped him of his dignity. He was treated terribly. He was treated like the boy, and it was appalling. Like Bennett, Ture had worked as a waitress at the Hard Rock Cafe in her hometown. At 17, she left home and went to Wellington, where, for a time, she helped write songs for a singing telegram service. She moved back to Palmerston North and entered Teachers College before becoming a community organiser at an unemployed workers' rights centre. She moved to Auckland in 1991 and did similar work. Now, I want to make a point on here. Our mutual friend Russell Malcolm told me once on an interview, I said, who the fuck do you look for as a politician, Russell? And he says, somebody who has a track record of self-sacrifice for the good of others. And I was like, whoa, that's the only criteria, isn't it?
Yep.
Only criteria.
Yeah, that's the only thing you need. And something about the political standings is somehow along the lines, they made it that you had to go to university and shit and be a well-educated, on paper type person to run for parliament. But you don't. You can just be anyone. Anyone can stand in parliament. Anyone at all. You could get up right now, Vinny, and go and stand in Parliament.
Well, don't tempt me. Now, well, benefit from...
For real, you really could. You have a record of self-sacrifice. You fucking put yourself on the line every time you interview someone like myself or someone with a real story to put out there. We don't need a politician. We need a spokesperson to start off with. We need one normal person to be able to stand in Parliament. I'm not talking a lawyer. I'm not talking a fucking doctor. Someone who speaks people.
It's interesting you should say that, because here are the things that people don't know. Doctors, lawyers, they all go through university. This you do know. What you don't know is what cult indoctrination techniques look like. What do they look like, Vinny? Well, they sound a lot like endless repetition. They look a lot like massive sleep deprivation. They look almost like silo mentality that ostracizes the outsiders who think differently from the rest of the group. They look like they've got a central authority figure who controls the group. They sound like they speak a slightly different language so that when the cult members are outside of the cult, they can talk in amongst themselves without anybody knowing what the hell they're talking about. Does this sound like the practice of medicine and the practice of law to you, ladies and gentlemen? Does to me. All right. My brother was became a chiropractor, and he told me one time he was so tired after studying and everything like that, and so poor, that he was walking home from the shop with a little bit of ham for a ham sandwich because that was all he could afford, and he fell asleep while he was walking, stumbled a couple of steps, and then woke up again. Okay, that's the kind of sleep deprivation mind control that happens against these people who get indoctrinated in these institutions. They're trying to break you, much like they do in the military, when they get you up really, really early, banging the trash cans and things like that, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning so that you don't get the capacity for sleep. Same as officers training. They are breaking you down. When you have slept, you can think. When you can think, you can defend yourself and you can ask questions about what is going on. But if you have not slept, and if you get punished, and collectively punished in a lot of cases, for ever questioning the doctrine, you don't question it. And you become a perfect slave master in training for the rest of society to follow blindly, as you have followed your education blindly. That's how the dynamic works. Apologise for that tangent. Benefit Ford. In 1993, she gave birth to her own child, Pew Pew. She... Pew Pew! I'm sorry, I had to put that in there. That's so racist, but...
You just did that. It reminds me of Came a Hot Friday, the Cisco Kid, Billy T. James. Pew Pew!
I love Billy T. James, man. I wish he was still alive, actually. She was single and flatting in places such as Balmoral, Dominion Road and Arch Hill. It was a struggle to get by when you're living on a really low income. You have no flexibility, no control over your financial circumstances because everything you get is the barest minimum. Now, how they actually created that when they were getting rid of the benefits in this country is the government ordered a study of how much it costs the average person to eat, right? And they put it out in categories. They say, this is how much it costs the average person with no skills to make things from scratch to eat, and this is the one that people have when they've bought all their food in bulk and they know how to make everything from scratch, right? That's the very bare minimum. So what they did is they said, let's cut all the benefits except the very, very bare minimum and only give people that from then on in. All right? So it guarantees struggle. It guarantees hardship. And the reason why they actually wanted to do this, according to former Reserve Bank governor, former head of the National Party, Don Brash, is to drive down people's wages, to make life harder for all the people who did have jobs, right?
When it comes to substituting that bare minimum by growing gardens and stuff, they passed that. They passed a law while John Key was in that, well, he literally stood up in front of the public, in front of the whole nation, and said gardening is growing your own food. And hunting is now no longer a right, it's a privilege. Yeah. So they took away our literal rights to grow our own garden. So what that means, Vinny, is that if I go outside into my garden, which is always well-stocked, and say dig up some potatoes and give them to the neighbour, I'm actually breaking the law via health codes because apparently it's unhealthy and not safe anymore.
Mm-hmm. And you can have your property invaded by Monsanto private contractor mercenaries who will be immune from prosecution if they kill you or your dog or destroy any of your property. Okay? Welcome to New Zealand.
And that's a legal right. They gave that right to Monsanto to come in and rip your garden out and genetically test your seed. Even if you've got heritage seed in the crop 10Ks up the road, blew some pollen over to your corn and it cross-pollinates your corn and they come and trace it and it's got any trace of their DNA from their shit in it, they can come and take everything off you. I've got a couple of mates, one of them, Vandermeer, there's a case in Napier of a old man that a good friend of mine, Daryl's grandfather, actually, who grew lots and lots of beautiful vegetables and inherited seed and sold some land to Waddy's Heinz, and they grew onions on it and corn on that land, and it cross-pollinated into his garden, and they came in, sent in the Monsanto fucking mercenary dudes and took his whole shit off him, took everything off him. His whole, the seeds and stuff he'd been growing since his father gave him those original seeds, you know, because of the crops that were 5 or 6 Ks up the road, cross-pollinated his corn, and they came in and they literally took his house, his land, took everything off him. This is land that had been in that family since the 1800s, one of the oldest land claims and land disputes in Hawke's Bay history.
And they're doing the same thing in the United States as well. Now a lot of family farmers, very similar situation. Mercenaries come in, take your land, right? Just take your frickin' land. I mean, what do you... And a friend of mine was asking me one time, he goes, Vinny, what can I do to make sure that the council doesn't come on my property or does any of this kind of shit to me? And I go, 50 caliber machine gun nest at the gate, you know?
I was going to say that. It's actually getting to the point where, well, I know hundreds of people, probably thousands of people that have already armed themselves, you know, like, I know people that will defend their lands with their blood. You know, and I'm not talking about Māori activists. I'm talking about generations of European families that have been here since day dot, generations of Māori families, Chinese families, fucking families that have been here since New Zealand was colonised. We weren't just colonised by Britain. You know, we had more Chinese immigrants and shit here. There's so many people out there that are armed right now just waiting for an excuse to revolt violently. Mm. But we can't have that happen, Vinny, because that'll give everybody... the power to come and intervene and give us some of that good old-fashioned American freedom, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's what will happen. If we pull up arms, we'll get given some freedom.
Mm. Well, I had a joke about that, actually. I was telling this to my my sister's fiancé. Say, hey, do you know where the Māori term cheer cheer bro came from? Actually came from the Chinese immigrants, all right? Because to say thank you in Chinese is share share. And a lot of the Maoris and Chinese used to work together during the gold rush, and it later became chur chur. And he's like, oh, really, bro? And I was like, no, you can't. I just made it up.
You've just called four bastards. Anyway, carry on.
All right. You can't save, so when things go wrong, kids get sick, and you have zero ability to manage it. That's New Zealand. That's why people do what I did, which is just to try to get a little bit more to make sure you're able to keep your kids well when things go bad. What she did was to lie about her living situation in order to keep the maximum accommodation allowance. So what I did basically was... Excuse me. I'd be living in a house and there'd be other people living there, and it might be a 3-bedroom house. I'd say there were 3 people living there, but there were 4. In one house, I was 1 extra flatmate. In another house, it was 2. It was bad. It just helps reduce your costs. It was just enough to get you over the hump. She estimates she receives somewhere between $20 and $50 a week, but can't remember how long it went on for. Now, this is in contrast to John Keane.
I'd say that's bullshit, honestly, Vinny. Say that if she charged anybody in my lifetime $20 or $50 a week to stay in a spare bedroom, I'd say, nah, I'd say that she's bullshitting about that.
In 1995 money, maybe not.
Yeah.
Because since John Key came in, the New Zealand dollar's actually just crashed massively. What is it now? It's like almost $3 for a can of Coke now. It used to be a buck when I was a kid, you know.
Oh, God.
Mm.
Yeah, back before Coke was, when Coke was more expensive than water.
In 1995, she entered law school. See, ding, 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 right there. On the DPB, receiving a training incentive allowance which helped towards fees and childcare. She was with her now husband, Warwick Stanton, during this period, but refuses to say if she was collecting the DPB while in a relationship. Refuses to say, that means she was.
Yeah. You know?
that involves talking about other people, and I think that would be a breach of trust, as opposed to not being honest, which is the very definition of a breach of trust. Therese says she put Work and Income New Zealand in a position where it has no choice but to investigate her. She'll pay back what she owes, she says, with her parliamentary money that she gets paid from the taxpayer, whose money she stole, that she's going to pay us back with money that she... Maybe I'm splitting hairs.
Back with money we pay her.
Yeah, maybe I'm splitting hairs here. She says admitting to her deceit was a political and legal risk. But she didn't do it as a political risk. She did it as a political gamble, okay? There's a whole bunch of poor people in this country who have really, really shit benefits because of things that Paula Bennett has done to them. And after Ash actually broke the fucking ground on this issue, then she comes out hoping to gain a whole bunch of votes from all the poor, disenfranchised people who, like she used to be, but isn't anymore.
Yeah, well...
just taking a stab in the dark.
Yeah, just something there. And that's something else I considered... what politicians are going to try and use this as a legal game, but she hasn't gained anything from it. Nationals actually used it as an excuse to discredit her even more, even though it shouldn't be an excuse to discredit her. She should be given a bit of a clap on the back for saying, yeah, sure, okay, but then she should have been more honest about it. She will. So she's going to get the government to investigate something that the government did, and then she's going to get to pay it back with taxpayers' money that she stole in the first place.
Yeah, it's a snake eating its own tail, isn't it?
It's actually bullshit. I think that they should be investigated. And as far as the whole, I've given Wins no choice but to investigate me, I know why she did that, and that's because that's really given Wins no choice but to investigate Paula Bennett as well, which I set in motion not last week, the week before. So in the paper, we get Paula Bennett investigated by Wins with a Wins worker that doesn't like Paula Bennett.
Mm. Quote, I didn't get any legal advice before I did it, because it wouldn't have made any difference to me, and I know what the consequences are likely to be. It's risky to me, and my family, and my party, which is why I checked with them first. But it's worth me taking the hit if it means New Zealanders understand how appalling our welfare system has become and how easy it is to fix. You know, I can understand that sentiment.
Yeah, same. I understand it, but I also think that she was silly by not coming out completely about it. She should have been, because there will be things that will get found.
Like, what if she did? Just like you came out, but then they just watered down what she said.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Oh, yeah. Okay, I get that, yeah.
Some possibility. I do want to give her the benefit of the doubt. When I was a young activist, the first thing that I was into in terms of activism was cannabis, and she was probably the most onto it and honest about it. The question I was asking people was, do you know somebody who's ever used cannabis, and do you think all of those people should be in jail? You know, the answer is always yes, and then no, I don't want them to go to jail. And she's, but her answer was different. It's, what do you mean, besides myself?
Yeah.
You know, Paula knows exactly how hard it is. Oh, sorry, Ash, go ahead.
I was just going to mention on the cannabis thing. Oh, we also live in a country now where if you donate to a government party and get caught for being a convicted pedophile, aka our Sultan friend in Auckland who got done for raping an 8-year-old and then a 12-year-old while he was on bail for it, and has just been given diplomatic immunity for 5 years, bro. He's a sultan from a place that America's just taken over, and he donated to the National Party and got done on two counts of paedophilia and received 5 years suspended sentence while given full diplomatic immunity in New Zealand and free to roam the streets. Yet you get caught selling a couple of fucking tunnies and you can go to jail for up to fucking 7 years.
I was going to go to jail for up to 8 years when I got busted selling tunnies. I only had 13 grams on me.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, bro.
Right, and they tried to. Yeah, I know. That's bullshit. That's fucking crap. The maximum sentence is this. No, you don't get told anything different while you're standing in the courthouse for selling a bit of pot or smoking a bit of weed. But apparently, in this country, if you're rich, you can fuck a child and get away with it, mate.
Yeah.
it's true, right?
Yeah, bro.
That story's on the Sensible Sentencing Trust website. Yeah, and that happened this year, maybe a weekend, 2 weeks ago, maybe at the max, that was released on the Sensible Sentencing Trust Act. I did share it, but it kept getting removed.
Yeah. Paula knows exactly how hard it is. Bennett told RNZ this week the Greens' plan to take away work obligations for beneficiaries completely horrifies me. She admitted that thousands of people had had their benefits cut, but said sole parents who'd found work were doing so much better off benefit. Touré says Bennett's changes to the welfare system have been disastrous. Under her changes, there's no way I could have been on the DPB and studied for a law degree. I would have been trapped in a system of low pay and benefits. And that's what they want for all of us, I think.
Yep.
Forever.
And that is exactly why I put that letter out, right there, that particular sentence right there. I would have been trapped in a system of low pay and benefits. So to me, that this article was just pretty much verified the facts of Paula's life before she became, that I made public in my letter, before she became a politician, but has also outlined the fact that she's carried those same practices, as you said, she's a psychopath, into the way that she's made political gains and become the Deputy Prime Minister of New Zealand. What it was for me is watching the new budget and seeing what they took away from the people of New Zealand. And being an I prospected for the Black Car in my late teens in Gisborne, actually from Mangakaha out of Fraser Town, back when I thought that type of lifestyle was cool. And those same gang members, one of them who was selling crack and pee back then, stood up and got himself clean and stood with a whole lot of people that they fight with these men of honour. Hey, look,
can you speak up, Ash? It's a little muffled.
So the gang members that went to Parliament a month and a half or 2 months ago and asked them, these are men of mana, they hate each other, got together and for the first time in New Zealand history, went to the government and said, hey, look, we need a fucking help. We need help because we're killing our kids by doing what we're doing and we can't get off it because we are drug addicts and our gang members are drug addicts. Can you please help us? And then Paula Bennett turned around and said, no. When a year ago, she was one of the people that was pushing the reform to help gang members get off drugs. If you remember, she was on 60 Minutes saying to the mongrel mob, rehab, that's in Waikato. They have a rehab for their gang members that have turned into crackheads that's in the Waikato, and they go in there and they come out machines. You know, they come out fit, educated men. They're not just gang members anymore. They're members of society. They come out of this place and Paula Bennett turned around and said, no, I won't do it. And then when she released the budget, or the national government itself released the budget, and they're taking away things, mental health. They're taking away mental health. So they're literally killing 1,000 people every year in New Zealand by taking away the service that's saving their life, Vinny. That's disgusting, bro. Yeah. They want to cut. They won't give teachers in Auckland or anywhere in the country a pay rise. And they're doing that indoctrination thing that you talk about. What will tired, poor teachers do when they're in the classroom? They'll act like tired, poor fucking teachers, eh? They won't do their jobs. I'm an ohelpo, and I actually speak to real people that are in the situations. If I see homeless people, I'll stop and I'll ask them questions. What do you need? And if I can help them, I'll help them. I will speak to teachers and doctors when I go in and get my checkups and shit like that, and dentists when I have my teeth done or whatever. I will speak to them and talk to them about what affects them and what they want to do to be able to do their job better. And this is it. They need more time off. Doctors, lawyers, teachers, people of mental health need more time off and better fucking wages. And what do the government do? They go and cut the staffing numbers and then cut the wages and make these poor bastards have to work fucking 40, 50-hour long days. You know, it's just disgusting, bro. The things that budget has done to our country is absolutely disgusting, and I might only be one person standing up, but hopefully what I do is show other people that if they have something to say, that it's okay to say it. Now, when I released that letter, Vinny, everybody said, is it true, is it true, is it true? But you can fucking see from this article I haven't lied about anything. You know, like, what a... There is a reason, and that's just disgusting. She's taken away any help to do with a system that affected me for my whole life, from the day I was taken into SIF's care as a baby in 1980. You know, like, she's taken away all of that. I'm so angry about it, I can't even explain it in words, man. It's disgusting.
Continuing on with the article then, in my opinion, she has stolen from thousands of women and children their rights to a decent future by imposing these burdens and sanctions that have locked them into a poverty cycle. I've been in that cycle and large degree still am, but it's the constant anxiety that gets to you, and that's where the mental health problems come from. So what they're doing at the same time as causing mental illness is they're cutting the possible mental health services that might help to remedy that situation for those who need it, which is going to lead to, what would you say at a guess, Vinny, the highest teen suicide rate in the OECD? Oh, wait, we've already got that. Well, let's cut the fucking budget for those people then. Let's do it immediately. God.
Mate, I'm a suicide survivor, and I didn't fuck around when I tried. It was something intervened in me, and I'm not a religious man, but I don't know what the fuck it was, but something saved my life the day that I tried seriously. And I woke up on the floor to a mate of mine whom I hadn't seen for about 6 months, just, I don't know, some connection or some shit, just happened to know where I'd be. And he came and picked me up, and what I'd done is I'd put a rope around my neck and tried to jump from a macrocarpa tree whilst overdosing on fucking zopiclone, diazepam, you fucking name it, I took it. And I woke up on the floor, and the thing that saved my life was to be able to go to mental health with the help of the police, because they were looking for me. People knew that was it. I was either going to kill someone and go political violent activist, or I was going to kill myself. So the police were looking for me, and they were helpful. And without those health requirements of the government that they had to provide me, mental health, doctor's treatments, counselling, ACC, access to my SIFS records, I would have been a dead man. I would have tried again. You know, and they've just gone and taken that away. And I was a fucking 34-year-old man, dude. I wasn't a 15-year-old kid. I was a 34-year-old man. Imagine what these 15-year-old kids that are now in the same mental state that I was in at that time because of the hardships I've had to endure. Now they can't even go and fucking speak to anyone about it. You know, they can't go and speak to anyone that isn't someone that the government tells you. You know, oh, you're allowed to speak to this person because he's an ACC-registered fucking counsellor. Well, I don't want to speak to an ACC-registered counsellor. I want to speak to a human being about it that has something to do with mental health.
Now, two of the things that I wanted to put out here is, number one, I wanted to give out a plug for Lifeline New Zealand, who take about 250,000 calls per year, saving many, many Kiwis' lives in their deepest and hardest times. And they had all of their government funding cut last year, all of it. And now they are surviving 100% on those New Zealanders who aren't trapped in the poverty cycle to help those who are to survive. So if you can, bring it in your hearts, ladies and gentlemen, to look up Lifeline on the internet and send a few dollars their way. I'm sure Clint Meyer from Fire Dragon Chilies, who advertises them in each and every one of his chili festivals, will highly appreciate that. The other part is about your personal suicide attempt there, bro, is the amount of psychiatric drugs that, if you read the labels, actually cause suicide is unbelievable. Yep. Now, that's why I think cannabis is kept illegal, because the side effects of cannabis are happy, hungry, thirsty, sleepy. What are the four things that are actually mostly lacking in people's lives when they're suffering from mental illness? A lack of hydration, a lack of nutrition, a lack of sleep, all right? And ergo, no happiness. Okay.
Yeah, like smiling, a real smile, eh, bro?
Mm-hmm. Now, for those of you who want to know how I prevented myself committing suicide, it was an advice from my brother after I got arrested for cannabis and was going to go to jail for up to 8 years for a first offence with no diversion, and had to sit with that knowledge for about a month, 2 months, while the legal system fucked round. Brother told me, Vinny, look in the mirror and smile at yourself, even if it's a fake smile. okay? Your brain will see you smiling and will trigger endorphins into your bloodstream and will actually physically make you happier as a direct result of seeing yourself smile. It's a very simple little tip that did save my life, ladies and gentlemen. Continuing on with the article, what angers me mostly about Paula is that she knows exactly how hard it is to live on a benefit with a small baby, and she has looked other women in the eye and said, I will not help you. Now, first of all, Paula doesn't know how hard it is to live on a benefit with a small baby because she didn't just have a benefit. You know, she also had her man and his many, many different houses and a huge club with all the drugs she could use, you know, that kind of thing. She wasn't actually really struggling at any point there, was she, bro?
No, I never saw any of them struggle. You know, like they weren't, no, she wasn't poor. Fuck, she always had a big bag of weed in her bag, man. Like, for fuck's sake, did she always, they were always, I didn't see her without a drink in her hand, bro. Now, if she was really struggling, how did she get that drink in her hand?
Alcohol, ladies and gentlemen, is also, along with pure methamphetamine, the drugs most likely associated to demon possession. That's why they call them spirits. Okay? Now, quote, I look at her story and I just cannot understand how someone who knows what it is like would subject that same experience on anyone else. And that's because, Materia, you're probably not a psychopath, okay? If you were, Paula Bennett's behaviour would not confuse you in the least. You go, oh, of course.
Gang, 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 gang.
Personal gain. Don't give a shit about the consequences of your actions, constantly screwing over people, constantly dishonest, craves money, power, sex, idolization, attention, despise being criticized. How is this not Paula Bennett, ladies and gentlemen? Okay, and the difficulty is, when we have a conscience, we mistakenly believe that the rest of the world thinks like we do. And this is part of my main mission in life, is to tell people there are people in this world who do not think like you.
Yeah, well, I've never thought like them, and you've never thought like them, have you, Vinny?
No, I have, and I continue to, but that's only because it's my fucking job, right?
Yeah, well, I guess you put yourself in their shoes more, eh?
Well, I'm a benign narcissist, so I've got a lot of the same traits as malignant narcissists, which have very similar traits to full blown psychopaths. But I've retained creativity, I've retained conscience, and as a direct result of the complex PTSD from hassles by the state with regards to my arrest, and accumulating onto that with like parental abuse and being abandonment and getting fucked over by employer after employer three times in a row when I was better at the goddamn job than they do, I'm now so traumatized I'm unable to find a job. All right. Not because I can't go looking for a job, but because if I ever actually had a job interview or even the prospect of going to do a job interview, I have panic attacks. These are the things I'm now restricted very, very massively in what I can do. I can't get a government job. I can't get a private job. What am I left with? I'm left with basically the dole or having to do something for the community and get paid virtually nothing for it. Right, and that is what I've decided to do because it was all that was available to me.
Yeah, well, and you're good at it too. So keep doing what you're doing, man. You know, like if you're finding it hard, there are people out there that will buy your stories off you. There are real newspapers and real tabloids and real articles that will, you know, they want real people. You know, John Campbell is the last real news reporter I ever seen on TV, and he got taken off the minute that he spoke up for the people in Christchurch, right? So there's no more people on TV that will actually get up and say and do what you say. That's important, man. And I share all of your posts and stuff that I see on YouTube. I have for a long time now, and if I don't share them straight away, I'll sit down and I'll watch them four or five times and listen to what the people that you're interviewing say. And I actually sit down with this diary here and this book here, and I write down facts, and I do my own research into them. And if I try and find those same facts and the same sources and resources to do my own research, independent research into the things that I'm worried about. If I looked on normal everyday media like RNZ1 and Radio New Zealand and those places, they don't give you the words and the names that you need to learn to understand what people are talking about. You said just before that they speak another language and it's a code. And I noticed on your Skype page that you have the proper terminology for propaganda. You know, like have a proper gander at what you think is propaganda.
That's right.
You know, and that's absolutely important. So propaganda to me is just a lie that's put out there. But if you listen to a fairy tale, the same fairy tale told by four or five people in their own words, they all say similar subjects, right? They all say similar key words like housing crisis, housing crisis, housing crisis is a big one at the moment. Housing crisis, homelessness. You know, obviously, they match up. You won't look on a New Zealand website and find the true facts and figures on it, but there are other places you can look. And if it wasn't for people like yourself, who do interviews with people like me, people like Russell, like real people, then we wouldn't have that opportunity to learn those facts, man. You should be getting paid for doing what you're doing, bro.
Well, I am, and that's another thing I do want to make very clear to people is that this show's been around for 10 years. Right?
Yeah.
10 years, and that has been specifically because of those of you who listen, learn, and donate, right? And then some of you are giving me, like, who's my lowest donor? I think one person's actually giving me 50 cents a week through his Kiwi Bank because he's on a benefit, right? He can't even afford to give me a dollar a week or anything like that because he doesn't know if he'll have a spare dollar at the end of the month through an automatic payment, right? Yeah. But on Dole Day, he knows he can give me 50 cents, and he does, right? Each according to their means. The biggest computer that I got was a $6,000 beast, and one guy popped down 60 $100 bills on my desk, bro, so I could go get it and continue to do my work. You know, like, that's the kind of generosity I've been shown in the course of this job, and I do want to actually make that very clear to people, is that they make the difference on a day-to-day, week-by-week, month-by-month, year-by-year basis in the quality of this show. It is only because of the people who support the show that green screen behind me exists, that the two computers beside each other so we can, like, show people articles while we're going through them exists. It used to be one 21-inch iMac and one shitty little 480 by 640 camera. That was what I began with. And every single time I've been donated either pieces of equipment or just money just so I can continue to eat. So it is something I often forget and I need to remind myself of many, many times, that although I'm going through really fucking bad struggles a lot of the time on a weekly basis, more or less, you know, it's a struggle. But I know that there are people out there who are worse than me, and I know that whatever struggle I'm going through, it doesn't lessen the obligation upon me to do what the media want in this country, because there is nobody else.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. There is no one else. And what I've been saying to people is that I'm not afraid of our government in any form. I don't care about, because I have been getting threats, like anonymous phone calls and people telling me, you need to stop right now. If you carry on like this, you will be punished. You know, like getting told I'll be punished for carrying on. Well, I'm not afraid to get out there and say what people are too scared to say. And so many people try and release an article to media and it gets taken away before it has the opportunity to get out there. I'll just get on a live feed and say exactly what needs to be said. And I noticed on my last one, it made me look like a jumbling idiot, because as it was going up, it would get cut for 30 or 40 seconds. And literally, after watching a replay of my live feed, I can actually see where things that I've been saying is getting taken out. You know, like, when I went on about when I said about vaccines, now I'll say something that I'm not completely anti-vaccine. I'm anti the shit that they're putting in it, and I'm anti the theories that they're saying is true. Like an example was, I got cut off in my last live feed, and it made me sound like I forgot to explain about what the herd theory is where if they vaccinate 95% of the population, the disease will disappear in the other five naturally out of occurrence. When that's a lie. they vaccinate 95% of the population, that other 5% that get it when they're young and don't get it when they're 20, they survive, and the other 95% die. Look at the last measles outbreak. Everybody in New Zealand had measles, mumps and rubella at intermediate. I think we got 3 injections over the space of 2 years. First one 10 and the last one at 13 years old before you go to high school. Well, the last measles outbreak killed 44 out of every 100 people around the world. Before that, it was 1 in every 10,000.
And
1 in every 10,000, Vinny. That's not just from one research. This is from several different sources. And I, like, they even cut out the part where I gave the information on where to find these resources. Like, if I say, like, this is one of your human rights, I can't say it in political terms, but if you look it up in this book here, and when I say the names of the books and the names of the resources that you can go through to find the information that you're looking for, they cut it out of my live feeds now as well. And I think that's shit.
Shit. So you're, yeah, like, being censored in real time, bro.
Yeah, yeah. Like literally, my last video feed, it would cut out and take, you know, between 30 seconds and 3 minutes off. Like, for most of it, even my comments, my real live comment time is 30 or 40 comments behind the actual time that it was written up. You know, like, it's saying it was posted at say my last one, 11:03 p.m. but it wouldn't show up on my screen or on anyone else's screen for half an hour. You know, and then people that have sent me through copies of my live feeds, because I've asked for them, lots of them are different copies of the same live feed. Some of them are shorter, some of them are longer. You know, like, I'm actually getting censored in real time because I'm not afraid to say what people know. And, like, I will release the names of international studies and places to look for them, but every time I've done that since my first live feed, it's all been censored and edited before it's actually getting on Facebook. They're watching them as they happen.
Well, that's actually quite interesting. It means you've got a team that has been pointed towards you. They do this with what's called targeted individuals. So essentially, what happens is you get ex-criminals, people who have a known scumbaggery nature. And you pay them by the hour to harass a certain person in a certain way. And you get a number of criminals, usually between 4 or 5, that operate in shifts so that it appears as though the person is being stalked by a number of different people that all appear independent, when the reality is they're actually all working together and they're being paid specifically to do that. And because they're not highly skilled individuals who are professionals at what they do, it comes across as these really, like, just psycho, crazy-ass motherfuckers, right? Is that what we're talking about here, bro?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking's happening. I've had 2 visits from the same board, not at my house, but in a friend's car that I've been borrowing to go and do my Ministry of Social Development WINS shit. The first time I got pulled up by them, the same two police in both instances, was outside the JP's office when I went and got it signed. Now, the funny thing was is that I didn't even tell my partner where the JP's office that I was going to was. And I didn't put the address into my cell phone until I got to literally 5 or 6 houses up the road, so just to make sure I was in the right spot. So I walked into the JP's office, and I came back outside to come and get my ID from the car, because I left it on the IPD, and I had a bank statement, and I had a copy of the original letter that I posted on Facebook, and I got it signed. I had a USB stick that had all of my that I needed to get signed, that I saved all of my live feeds and shit onto as I'm doing them. And
Sorry, say that again. We've got about 60 seconds left in the broadcast here, so just finish your statement real quick.
So they harassed me outside, tried to search my car with a search warrant that didn't exist because they couldn't produce one to me. The JP saved my ass, and I had a run-in with those same 2 cops outside WINS when I went in and got the piece of paper signed to get Paulo investigated. So I have been getting harassed quite a bit by them.
Now, also, a lot of these harassments are actually done by Freemasons. They've got a program called the Sentinel Program, which is a list of all the Masons worldwide, and you can just go, this is a cop, this is a lawyer, we can get them to do this. Thank you very much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Ashley, for coming out and doing what you're doing and spending the time with me today. Ashley.b.farrell on Facebook is his thing. You can go and check him out there, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening. We'll see you again sometime.
Cool. Cheers, Vinny.